also topics of the Bhagavatam. But now let's get to the real nectar, the real transcendental knowledge about the Leela avatars of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. That's where we're, what we're really interested in. Because Karna Kashaya Shoshan, they will dry up. You just hear about the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Not just how he creates the universe for us. We are interested in the creation of the universe, just like prisoners in the prison are interested in, you know, and the facilities they're getting in the prison. What's going to be available for lunch and what's in the library. They're just interested in the prison life. They don't have any contact with the outside world. So us, we have no contact with the spiritual world. Our interest is just our own little world. So although creating the material world is the least glorious thing that the Personality of Godhead does, the least interesting of all his pastimes. Yeah. He goes to sleep, and in his sleep he creates the world come out of his perspiration. Goes to sleep and sweats, and then the universes are created. And then he's within himself, he's enjoying his pleasure pastimes. But it's really not the most exalted of the Lord's pastimes, is creating the material. But for us it's important because all we know is the material world. And so in the beginning, especially in the beginning of devotional life, we're concerned about how God creates this world for us, for our enjoyment. Just like in the Bible, God created the world, he created the Garden of Eden for Adam and Eve to enjoy, and that's the most important thing God did. So we're also to appeal to that kind of mood, that our world is all that matters, and how God created it for us is all that's important of what he did. So therefore, in the second canto especially, and part of the third canto, there's a lot of description of the Srishti Leela, the Lord's creating the material world. And we start to learn about who God is and how he acts and what his transcendental nature is by studying these pastimes of creation. But Brahma, after relating that, about two chapters of that to Narada, he says, now I'm going to tell you, now I think you're purified enough by hearing this, that I can introduce the pastime incarnations of the Lord in his different avatars. So I'm going to, Anukramishya, I'm going to simply list them one after another. I'll give one verse for each avatar. Listen, because this will purify your heart and you'll be able to attain love of God. When you can understand the personality of Godhead, then your life is perfect. So similarly, Uddhava has done the same thing. He's given the essence of Srimad Bhagavatam already to Vidura by remembering Krishna's pastimes. We were reading the introduction to that, how Uddhava just picked out a few different things that Krishna did and how it bewilders him. How Krishna took birth in Kamsa's prison, how he hid away from his enemies in the fortress of Dwarka, and so on. But then he goes on, we didn't read that part, of Uddhava describing chronologically, in brief form, all the things that Krishna did from his birth up to his leaving Vrindavan. That's contained in the second and third chapters of the third canto. So that completed, meaning that Uddhava has already spoken the Bhagavatam, the essence of the Bhagavatam, at least the kind of essence that we find before the tenth canto, the description of all the different incarnations of Krishna. That, in essence, Uddhava has already spoken to Vidura. But Vidura wants to hear more. There's no end to the glories of Krishna. There's no end to the Bhagavatam. So he's put his request in. There's no harm in asking. This is how you do business in India. People, Rickshawala will ask you for a ridiculous price. It's just business. There's no harm in asking. You can always say no. Yeah, no need to get mad at anybody. It's just business in India. So similarly, same way, Vidura is, although it's unlikely that Uddhava is going to stop, is going to do it, but he asks. No harm in asking. But Uddhava is thinking that because Vidura is old enough to be his father, it's not correct. It's not correct for him to take the position of spiritual master. to take the position of Vidura as spiritual master. But he's presenting a good argument that you're a great Vaishnav. The Vaishnavs are the servants of everybody. You travel all over the world just to preach. So here I am. I need to be preached to. Why don't you preach to me? Yeah, that's an argument that's not easy to defeat. But Uddhava's reply is that, I'm sorry, you're my elder. It's not proper for me to take position of your spiritual master. So one thing we can understand from this is what it means to be a spiritual master. Of course, a disciple must see his spiritual master as absolute, as good as God. But he should also understand he should not be a fanatic and literally think that the spiritual master is God. That's Mayavad. That's a serious mistake. Spiritual master should be worshipped as good as God because he's the dear devotee of God and the appointed representative of God. But still, it should be understood, and even the disciples should understand, the position of spiritual master is not absolute, it's relative. It's a relationship. Uddhava is qualified, Prabhupada says in the purport a few verses later, that both of them are qualified to be anybody's spiritual master, both Vidura and Uddhava. Yeah. Not that either of them is less qualified or insufficiently qualified. Either of them can be anybody's spiritual master, Prabhupada says. But Uddhava refuses to accept the role. There's etiquette involved that would be transgressed. Therefore, he will not take the role of Vidura's spiritual master. It's a relationship. Someone, just like a father, is a father because he has a son, a child. Spiritual master is a spiritual master by virtue of his having a disciple. He's his disciple's spiritual master, not necessarily everybody's. Just like the father is his children's father, he's not everybody's father. In fact, he has a father. Everybody who's a father is also a son. Maybe not vice versa. Not every son is a father, but every father is a son. Every guru is a disciple. So it's a relative position. It's the disciple who has to see the guru as absolute. Now, you should not expect everybody to see the way you see. There's etiquette how we should have respect for all Vaishnavas, even if they refute, if they cannot see our spiritual master in the same light as we see him. We shouldn't be like immature children fighting over whose father is better. My father is better than your father. This is the business of immature children. Mature child is satisfied to think, my father brought me into this world. He gave me everything. Therefore, I'm indebted to him. Therefore, I love him. You know, if somebody's father down the street, you know, his son claims that his father is more beautiful and smarter, that doesn't matter. My father is my father. He saved me. My spiritual master saved me. That's all that matters. So here, the etiquette. Vidura was anxious, Prabhupada says in this purport to 25, the verse we just read. Vidura was anxious to hear from Uddhava the confidential knowledge known as Paramam Stitim. That phrase came up from a previous verse. He asked, I want to know about the Paramam Stitim. Not just ordinary knowledge of the personality of Godhead, how he's the creator, how he's the absolute truth, how everything emanates from him. That's basic knowledge. But I want to know about his supreme position. The intimate dealings he has with his loving devotees. Uddhava, I know that you're expert in this. You're one of those intimate devotees. And you're following the footsteps of those who are even greater intimate devotees than yourself. So I can hear from various sages about Vedanta philosophy, but I want to know about the supreme position of the personality of Godhead. That is, about the secrets of pure devotional service. Still, Uddhava is refusing. He replies here, beginning in verse 26. that Uddhava Uvacha, Nanu Te Tattva Sangradhya Rishi Kaushad Avongtike Sakshad Bhagavata Dishto Martya Lokam Jihasata. Sri Uddhava said, "You may take lessons from the great sage Maitreya, who is nearby, and who is worshipable for reception of transcendental knowledge. He was directly instructed by the personality of Godhead while he was about to quit the mortal world." So, the purport, Prabhupada points out that what Uddhava's concern here is not to violate the principle or commit the violation of Maryada Vyatikrama. Maryada means etiquette. Vyatikrama is transgression. There's mundane etiquette. You know, if you're eating salad, you have to use this size fork. That's, you learn in the etiquette books. But this is transcendental etiquette that's actually important. It makes a difference how you deal with exalted personalities. What Prabhupada points out is, according to scriptural injunction, one should be very careful of transgressing the law of Maryada Vyatikrama, because by doing so, one loses his duration of life, his opulence, fame, and piety, and blessings of the world. Yes, ma'am?
This is kind of a heavy reaction.
Heavy, yes.
You lose everything.
It's serious. It is.
How is that? Because I can understand that he wants to get that highest transcendental knowledge he can, and this is his opportunity, so he wants to take it. And
yes.
And everyone will try to do what the very did.
Well, it's not an absolute rule that you can't instruct your elder. That can be adjusted. But it's the individual situation here. Uddhava is judging individually, for himself. What might be right for somebody else, he doesn't feel is right for himself. Especially in this situation, it's not necessary. Vidura can be satisfied without Uddhava having to behave impertinently. Maitreya Rishi is available. He heard those same instructions, and he heard faithfully, and he's a competent person to speak. So because Vidura can be satisfied by turning him over to Maitreya, therefore, given that consideration, there's no need for him to be impertinent.
So he's not losing.
No. The thing is, you can do something that's ordinarily forbidden when it's necessary. It's certainly forbidden to kill your guru. But for Arjuna to do it, because of the special situation, because Krishna's asking him to do it, therefore he can violate one principle for a higher purpose. But here, there's no need to violate it.
Yeah. But I was just thinking that it would seem that it's more in terms of fulfilling the desire of Krishna, because according to Manusamhita, within the Shudra culture, it's concerned with but within the Brahminical culture, it's concerned with true knowledge.
Yes.
So if the person is qualified in knowledge, then he would be considered superior. For example, Sukadeva speaking that.
Yeah. I mean, the first, and Prabhupada points out, I didn't mention it yet, but in the previous purport, he alludes to the statement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, Kiba Vishva Kiba Nyasi Shudra Kene Noi, Ye Krishna Tattva Veta She Guru Hoi. It doesn't matter if someone's a Brahmin or a Shudra, a Sannyasi or a Grihastha, if he is the person who actually knows the science of Krishna. Prabhupada translates it as the science of Krishna. The words are just Krishna Tattva, who knows the Tattva of Krishna. But this means not knowing just theoretically. It means realization. Ideally, it means actually being in an established, intimate relationship with Krishna. That's really knowing the science of Krishna. But you can also know, theoretically or whatever. That's guru in a lesser sense. That's the first qualification, yes. So therefore, when Shukadeva spoke the Bhavatam to Parikshit, great sages were present. Among those sages who there was no announcement. You know, there was no newspaper announcement or television announcement. You know, Shukadeva is going to speak today to Pariksha. Just the sages knew it was happening by their mystic powers. Or there was some sage grapevine news gone around. And they appeared all of a sudden. 26 of the greatest sages showed up. Among them were Vyasadeva and Narada. Vyasadeva is Shukadeva's father and his spiritual master, Shiksha Guru. And Narada is Shukadeva's Param Guru. He's Vyasadeva's Guru. The Guru and the Param Guru are gladly sitting down at the feet of their disciple to hear Bhagavatam. That is technically, Shukadeva should have technically said, "I'm sorry, I can't speak. My guru, my guru's guru. You speak instead of me." But everybody wanted to hear from Shukadeva, and so on the guru's order, I'm sure he took permission from Narada and Vyas. Vyas, first you take permission from your own guru, from Vyas and then Narada, and then he spoke. So there are cases where, because Shukadeva is the person to speak Bhagavatam, foreordained, that's what he came to this world for. Therefore, Narada and Vyas were glad to hear from their own disciple, to take the role of disciple hearing from Shukadeva. But in the case of Uddhava, he didn't see the need. It wasn't necessary. A surgeon has to commit violence, cut open the body of his patient. But when appropriate. If he starts slicing people up in the street at random, then he's a criminal. Using the same scalpel, if he uses it inappropriately, or if he is incompetent, then he's sued for malpractice and not allowed to practice medicine anymore. He has to use his tool, his scalpel, appropriately. Like that, there's appropriate situations in which to violate one principle for a higher one. And Uddhava felt, in his judgment, that this was not necessary to accept Vidura as a disciple when Maitreya Muni was available. Nearby. Not only, he's the right person, but he happens to be nearby. Sort of nearby. Vidura and Uddhava are sitting in Vrindavan, and Maitreya is going to be met in Hardwar. It's a good 500 kilometers away, but anyway, relatively close. This applies to us also very much. We want to attain the highest devotional service. But if we jump over our spiritual master, our spiritual masters, and try to stick our nose in Krishna's intimate business without their blessings, then, as said here, we will lose our duration of life, our opulence, our fame and piety, and the blessings of the world. This is what it means to become a sahaja. You may argue that sahaja means a certain upa sampradaya, the word shouldn't be used to apply to just anybody, but there's a principle. There's a tendency in everybody's heart to, just like there's a tendency to want to become God, there's a tendency to want to enjoy sense gratification, and there's a tendency to want to approach Krishna in a cheap way. So that sahaja tendency is there in everybody. It has to be very vigorously avoided. Because if we don't work through the proper means of serving, hearing from, serving, and satisfying our own spiritual authorities, and we try to go to Krishna on by imagination, go to Krishna on our own strength, then we're committing the offense of Mayada Vyatikrama, and it's a serious matter. We will not be successful. No way. If we act whimsically and try to barge into Krishna's intimate affairs when we haven't received the blessings of our spiritual master to do that. Uddha and Maitreya, Uddhava and Vidura and Maitreya, they all know very well how to do these things properly. Therefore, they're able to, Maitreya himself was able to become elevated from a Jnana Mishra Bhakta to a person empowered to speak the Bhagavatam. Vidura, starting off as a demigod, he's now already, by Krishna's association and the association of devotees, perfect. And he's going to be the perfect hearer of Srimad Bhagavatam. And Uddhava, who associated with Krishna all his life, and then got the special mercy to be able to associate with Krishna's most intimate devotees in Vrindavan. And now he's got special assignment to preach on Krishna's behalf. So, because they all observe these principles of proper Vaishnava behavior, therefore they're successful. Yes. I'm sorry. Any comments or questions?
I was surprised to hear you say that Maitreya was living 500 kilometers.
Oh, maybe it's a little less. Not that he's living. He's traveling around, but Vidura and Maitreya are going to meet each other in Hardware. Right?
But where was Uddhava and Maitreya?
They were at Gyanagudri in Vrindavan, next to Vamshivata. In Vrindavan city, yeah.
They were in Vrindavan.
That's where they met.
Vidura met Uddhava in Vrindavan?
Yeah. The place Gyanagudri. Is that right? Yes. It's next to Vamshivata, in downtown Vrindavan, near the shore of the Jamuna. You can, some houses around, there's a couple of cows there tied up, and that's the place.
It seems like, from the words you get, it sounds like Maitreya is residing nearby, It's a bit shocked to hear that he's
it's not so near.
Hard war.
Yeah, it's a couple of weeks' walk. A couple of weeks to get there.
Even today, with today's transport available, you wouldn't someone's all the way up in Hardware.
Well, there's a bus every morning that starts from Govardhan, stops in Vrindavan, and it gets to Hardware 10 hours later. Yeah. This is a direct bus, but if you walk, it's maybe a week and a half, so 10 days, 12 days. Yes. To be.
One likes personal instruction.
You mean you need someone else to give you instruction or instruction?
It's in the defense to, if you don't see a spiritual master at all, it's in the defense to look elsewhere.
No, it's Jiva Goswami, others tell us we can only have one Diksha Guru, but we can have any number of Shiksha Gurus. We can go to other Vaishnavas for instruction. But the etiquette is, if you're going to take someone, you can get instruction from anybody. And in ISKCON, we're all one society. I hope we all have the same philosophy, more or less. So you can go to any, fixed up devotee in ISKCON and get good instruction. But if you want to accept someone as your Shiksha Guru officially, and you actually trust him 100% and rely on him as your main source of instruction, then you should get permission from your Diksha Guru. Either on his order or at least with his permission, do that. Now, because devotees have different opinions and it's just the etiquette. You ask permission, then you can accept the Shiksha Guru. We can all consider Prabhupada our Shiksha Guru. The Shiksha Guru doesn't have to be physically present. You can get instructions from a book, from recordings, from what you remember that he said. So Prabhupada is everybody's Shiksha Guru in this kind. But you can take others. If your spiritual master is not present or available to give you instruction, you have to get practical guidance from somebody. So he should appoint, or you should ask, ask to get appointed somebody, or if you have someone in mind, ask permission. Yes?
If you are desiring that, that doesn't mean that your relationship with your guru is...
No. I mean, you want to carry out the desire and the order to your spiritual master. So to get further instructions from someone is a way to fulfill the obligation of satisfying your guru. Anyway, by getting permission and doing it with the consultation and permission of your Diksha Guru, then we avoid any conflicts of different opinions and so on. It should be someone who has basically the same ideas as your spiritual master, as your Diksha Guru. Anyway, there's nothing wrong with it. It's actually a basic Vaishnava principle. So many cases. Narottam Das Thakur, Srinivas Acharya, Shamananda, they had their Diksha Gurus, but they came to Vrindavan, to Radhakund, and they took instructions. Jiva Goswami and Krishnas Kaviraj became their teachers, their Shiksha Gurus, with the blessings of their Diksha Gurus. And Jiva Goswami and Krishnas Kaviraj, they were empowered to pass on the teachings of Lord Chaitanya to the next generation. And they passed it on to these three great devotees. But that was a Shiksha relationship, not Diksha. So our specific succession is, in our line, very often the Shiksha relationship is more important. The specific succession that we have in our altars that Prabhupada gives us. Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati, Bhakti Gorkishwaras Babaji, Bhakti Vinod Thakur. That's actually Shiksha relation, Shiksha connection. Bhakti Vinod Thakur, he has his Diksha from a different line, from a caste Goswami, Bipin Bihari Goswami. Our Diksha line goes that way. Our Shiksha line comes from Vishwanath Chakravarti, Narottam Das Thakur. But that's our Shiksha line, not our Diksha line. But we put our Shiksha Parampara on the altar, not the Diksha Parampara. Because for us, in following in the line of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the Shiksha is even more important. Okay. I'm sorry, it's a problem with the acoustics in this room. From the backside, it's especially hard to hear you. Yes. Yes. And it may be, no, the etiquette has to be maintained, but the transcendental principle is Chakudano Diloye Janme Janme Prabhu She. My spiritual master is who gives me, wakens up the transcendental knowledge in me. He's life after life, my master. And Prabhupada talks about how the spiritual master has to come back to take care of his disciples. But actually, the person who gives you Diksha is not necessarily that Nitya Guru. Nitya Guru is one, your eternal spiritual master. Your immediate connection in the hierarchy to Krishna in the spiritual world, in your Sarup. You know, we have our spiritual master in our Sarup. But it's not completely literal that you have the spiritual master has to follow all his disciples. You know, what if you have 50,000 disciples? And they, you know, in the next life, they're scattered all over the universe. What, you know, how are you going to follow them all? So, it's been explained to me. Actually, they discussed this more in the other sampradayas, in the Madhvada Sri Sampradaya. But I asked them, and they said that the person who gives you diksha is not necessarily your Nitya Guru in a particular lifetime. He may be a representative of them. practical thing. The Diksha Guru may just be representative, and therefore sometimes you may, in this lifetime, have a stronger spiritual relationship with the Shiksha Guru. You know, the spiritual relationship may be more real, that may be your actual guru, or a more direct representative of your eternal guru, than the person who gave you formal Diksha. Still, the etiquette must be maintained. You must never be disrespectful to your Diksha Guru. Yeah. Even if there's some disagreement of philosophy, you have to treat him respectfully. And worship him as good as God. Even if you have more affection for somebody else, still the etiquette must not be violated. The more natural situation is that the most prominent Shiksha Guru becomes the Diksha Guru. Now, better to cultivate a Shiksha relationship first and let that evolve into a Diksha relationship. Even if it takes some time. Okay. Anything else? Yeah. Okay. It's eternal. It's never broken. The disciple may forget, but the Guru, Krishna and the Guru don't forget. When our intelligence is purified and we recover our Krishna consciousness, then for us it's revived. There's an official recognition of the connection, initiation. It's like a formal contract. But what must be done is that the disciple must come back to his Krishna consciousness. If I may take initiation, I may go through the motions of doing my sadhana. If I don't become Krishna consciousness, I won't realize my relationship, spiritual relationship with my spiritual master or anybody else. And if I do become Krishna conscious, even without the formality of initiation, I've attained success. So it's the consciousness. If you become Krishna conscious, then our relationship with our spiritual master is realized. And vice versa, without realizing that relationship, there's no real Krishna consciousness. If we displease our spiritual master, if we neglect him, then there's no question of entering Krishna's intimate service. Then we just lose everything. Anyway, getting back to Uddhava. But it's important. These are the... I intended to talk about these things. You know, they're heavy. This is how Uddhava, Vidura, and Maitreya succeeded, is by following the standard process of devotional service. So, So, taking the position of spiritual master should be done for Krishna's service, not for name and fame. Therefore, one should not be eager to give instructions in the presence of an elder. But if they order you to, then that's your duty, just like Shukadev was requested by all the sages to speak. No. And I'm sure Narada and Vyas were among those who gave their assent and their request. Shukadev, please speak. So if his guru and his param guru tell him to, then he has to sit on the Vyasasana and speak. One becomes a guru on the order of his guru. And just for Krishna's service, not for personal gain and fame. That's what Prabhupada says here. One should never pass over the honor due to an elderly spiritual master in the interest of one's own personal gain and fame. Impertinence on the part of the pseudo-spiritual master is very risky to progressive spiritual realization. So, okay. And then it's described that this was the end of the discussion between Vidura and Uddhava. Uddhava spent the night apparently in great distress, but we have to remember that this distress is just an appearance. He's actually in the highest ecstasy of Viraha Bhava. And then he left. He went off the long walk to Bhadravik Ashram. The word is there in the verse Iti saha virurena vishramurtir guna kataya. He spent the evening, Vidura and Maitreya spent the evening discussing the gunakata, narrations about the transcendental qualities of Krishna. And Krishna is described here as Vishramurti. Vishramurti, we understand, means universal form. Vishra means universe, but it also means everywhere, or everything, the Sanskrit pronoun Vishra. And then Vishra means universe because everything and everywhere, that means the universe. But the word literally means everything, or everywhere. So one who has his form visible everywhere, he's called Vishramurti. We usually understand that to mean the universal form, Krishna's gigantic form that incorporates all the elements of creation. More or less impersonal form. But this is different. It's not that Uddhava and Vidura were talking about, you know, literally the universal form. That is elsewhere. Maitreya is going to talk about the universal form, the creation. Previously, Brahma talked about the creation to Narada, but that wasn't the topic of discussion between Vidura and Uddhava. We hear what they were talking about. They were talking about Krishna's Leela. So Vishwamurti, Prabhupada explains in a different way here. The pure devotees, especially when they're in the ecstasy of separation, they begin to see Krishna everywhere. Yeah. Not the impersonal feature of the Lord, but the intimate appearance of his loving exchange with his devotees, that form of the Lord. They remember him, and everywhere they look, they see him. This is what's attained in that ecstasy, in that so apparent, so-called torment, misery of separation. The benefit is that you get to see Krishna everywhere you look. You become so intent in remembering him that you can't see anything without seeing him. That's the Vishwamurti realization that's being described here. It's a rare thing. Uddhava is on that level of realization, and by his association, Vidura is able to share that realization. He's by osmosis, by contact with one on that level of realization, Vidura is also being able to see Krishna everywhere. That's a sign of perfection. If you cannot see anything in this world without seeing Krishna's presence in it, and not just, you know, oh, this is Krishna's energy, but actually to see Krishna there in his personal form, then you're becoming perfect. Okay, then...
Where are you actually seeing that, you know?
Yes.
Well, in my previous verse, so text 26.
Yes.
The Buddha is actually seeing Krishna.
Lesson 27. Yeah. Such, maybe subscribe there in the purport 27. When the Lord is perceived as Vishramurti, it is not that he loses his personality or transcendental eternal form, that he becomes visible in the same form everywhere. It's described also by Lord Chaitanya and Chaitanya Charitamrita, a very advanced devotee. Wherever he looks, he doesn't see any material object. Instead, he sees Tad Ishta Deva Spurti. He sees the image of his own worshipable deity. Looks at a tree, looks at a, you know, rock, and he sees Krishna in the form in which he worships Krishna. You can call this hallucination, but this is one of the byproducts of Virudha Bhava, the ecstasy of separation.
Vishwamurti actually means universal form.
Yeah, but literally, you know, taking it more in the ordinary literal sense, it means the personal form manifest everywhere. Yeah. So it doesn't. This doesn't mean impersonal universal form.
The text itself doesn't seem to indicate what Uddhava was seeing. It said they were simply discussing.
Oh yeah. No. This is what's brought out in the purport. In the purport of 27. Yeah. It's. I don't know whose commentary Prabhupada draws this out of. Either Jiva Goswami or Vishwanatha Chakravarti. One of those two commentaries. Prabhupada simply repeating what they say. That's what they get from the word Vishwamurti, that they were on that level of transcendental realization. You know, without the help of the commentary, say Vishnu Chakravarti's, I don't know if it is his or Jiva Goswami's, without the help of the commentary, we're just left with the literal meaning of the word. But they give us the insight, you know, what it also, you know, the deeper meaning of it.
Yes.
Oh, if you haven't reached it. Yes. Yes. So we have to be very careful to follow Guru, Shastra, and Sadhu. Until we come to the actual level of Raghunuga Bhakti, we have to follow the Vaidhi system, in which we're very careful to follow the instructions of Guru and Shastra. You know, because we can make so many mistakes. Our own intelligence can tell us so many wrong things, and we can commit serious offenses with all good intentions. Because, and especially if we start thinking that we see Krishna everywhere when we actually don't, when we don't have the qualification to act spontaneously, and we start trying to imitate spontaneous devotional service, then we get in serious trouble. So before that stage, Guru, Shastra, Sadhu, strict, you know, adherence. You know, our own intelligence can't be trusted. We have to rely on the intelligence of better persons. Yeah, he's very tolerant, but it has limits. He's, you know, we can commit aparads, but they add up. You know, Krishna can tolerate, you know, 1,000 aparads, but, you know, even to little ones. But if we commit year after year, keep on doing it, there's a point where Krishna can't tolerate it anymore. Krishna's, you know, internal energy will say, you know, will curse us, and even if Krishna, you know, Krishna won't be free to give us his mercy anymore. It's only so much aparad that Krishna can tolerate. There's a point where it's too far, and little aparads add up. Anyway. That's the heavy part, we can move on. So there's a change of topic here. So Uddhava's left. Now he's on his way to Bhadragasha. But then King Parikshit asks, how was it that this arrangement was made? All the Vrishnis and Bhojas went back to Godhead, back to the heavenly planets, back to Vaikuntha, wherever they're meant to go. Why alone did Uddhava remain? So, Shukadeva's answer is to explain why Krishna chose Uddhava to be his representative, to take the responsibility to preach Krishna's glories, to teach about Krishna to the world. We already read these two verses, but here are the Prabhupada's purports to them also. Shukadeva first of all mentions that Krishna's the arrangement that the Brahmins cursed the Yadus to be destroyed, that was just a pretext. Krishna wanted to wind up his pastimes. He wanted to remove his devotees. Krishna's responsibility in this disappearance was to remove the burden of the earth. So he already got rid of all the demons with the help of the Yadu dynasty. But now the Yadu dynasty had nothing left to do. They were a burden. You use one thorn to take out another thorn, but then you have to throw both thorns away. You know, you want to get rid of the thorn. Throw them off the road so nobody else steps on them. Like that, the Yadus have to be removed now. Otherwise, they're going to be more a burden than the demons were. So Krishna arranged for them to destroy themselves. So he did this, he wanted to leave this world, but then he started to think, that as Shukadeva Maharaj, Shukadeva Goswami describes here. Krishna wants to see that transcendental knowledge about himself is entrusted to someone who is competent to see it that it's properly disseminated, taught in this world. Of course, Krishna spoke the Bhagavad Gita to Arjuna. But Arjuna, he's not a teacher. He's a fighter. He's a great hero. He has so many great qualities, very chivalrous, excellent character. But he's, one thing, he's not so much as a teacher. Because he taught dancing for a year. Yeah. But Arjuna was the hearer of the Gita. We don't hear about Arjuna as the acharya of the Gita. Now that Arjuna's, who did Arjuna speak the Gita to? Yeah, you don't hear it. Uddhava is a teacher. He's also a kshatriya. It's not that because Arjuna's a kshatriya he's disqualified. Uddhava is also a kshatriya. But Uddhava is specially qualified as a teacher. So Krishna singled him out. Could have been Arjuna, but he singled Uddhava out as the most competent person to pass on this Bhagavatam knowledge. And yes, Uddhava spoke to Bhagavatam. We'll read about that later. That he actually, because our disciplic succession comes from Vyas, Shukadeva, but there's also another disciplic succession of Bhagavatam. So Krishna explains, he's talking to himself here, he's thinking to himself, that Uddhava is the one person I can entrust. Asman lokad, this is text 30. Asman lokad upadate mai gyanam marashrayam arhat Uddhava ev adha samprat atmat vatam varaha. Now I shall leave the vision of this material world, mundane world, and I see that Uddhava, the foremost of my devotees, is the only one who can be directly entrusted with knowledge about me. The only one who can do this job. This is not just ordinary knowledge, not just ordinary spiritual knowledge. Not just generic knowledge about the nature of God, as taught in the Vedanta Sutra. Not even just the kind of knowledge, the level of God conscious knowledge that was taught by Brahma in the four-verse Bhagavatam, but something more deep. Prabhupada uses the term Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, as Sutta Goswami described it. Specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. And Prabhupada says this specific knowledge is realized by pure devotional service and no other means. So, if you want a competent teacher of the science of Godhead, you need a pure devotee. You need someone who is fully surrendered to Krishna. Uddhava is perfect choice. And then the two famous verses that we read the first day. No devon vapi manyuno yadgunair narditak prabhu atomad vayunam lokam grahayan ihatishtutu. Uddhava is not inferior to me in any way because he is never affected by the modes of material nature. Therefore, he may remain in this world in order to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. So, because Krishna is, Uddhava is as good as Krishna, in Krishna's opinion. Of course, Krishna has special powers that nobody has, even Lord Narayan. Lord Narayan doesn't play the flute. He can, but he feels embarrassed. That, nobody appreciates it in Vaikuntha. He keeps his flute hidden. We don't read about Narayan, or Krishna in Dwarka is not going out to tend the cows every day. He has other things to do. So there's special things that only Krishna can do. So it's not literal. Uddhava doesn't dance the Rasa Leela like Krishna does. But for the purpose of acting as spiritual master, Uddhava is as good as Krishna. Uddhava is specially empowered. Krishna deposits with him the complete treasure of transcendental knowledge. Bhagavatam. Bhagavat Tattva. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam. That Uddhava is empowered to understand completely and to perfectly teach. So in that aspect, Uddhava is equal to Krishna. And why? Krishna says because he's never disturbed by the modes of material nature. He's transcendental. That's God's position. But a pure devotee can also share that. There's a statement at the end of the 11th chapter of the first canto by Suta Goswami. When Krishna came home to Dwarka, he first of all met all the citizens and they greeted him, you know, great festivity. Then he entered his palace. He offered obeisances to his mothers. And then he went to his inner quarters and he was greeted by his queens. So it looks a little funny, you know, he ends up just like a king. A victorious king comes home, you know, he's glorified as the conqueror of the world. Then he goes back to his palace and he's henpecked by his queens. But it looks like that Krishna is displaying the same syndrome. But it's explained in the last verse. Etad ishanam ishasya prakriti sto pi tadgunaya na yujite sadatma stayar yata buddhis tadashaya. This is the ishanam of ishasya, of isha. This is what makes God God. Is that even though he's surrounded by his material energy, he's not controlled by it. He's not affected by the material influence. Yata buddhis tadashraya, just equivalently, the intelligence of devotees who are fully surrendered to him is also not affected by the modes of material nature. That's the example. Krishna, God is God because he's not affected by his own material energy. And you want to show that by an example. The example is similarly to the intelligence of his devotees, which is also not affected by material influence. Because they're taking shelter of Krishna's devotional service, Maya can't touch them. Mama viye papajante mayam etam tarantito. Those who take full shelter of me, they can transcend illusion. So therefore, Uddhava can remain in this world to disseminate specific knowledge of the personality of Godhead. Krishna has his various energies, his Sandini Shakti, his Ladini Shakti, his Chit Shakti. By his Sandini Shakti, he maintains, especially in the form of Balaram, he maintains all the spiritual and material realms. The holy Dhamma Vrindavan is still there 5,000 years ago by the potency of the Sandini Shakti. We're sitting in Mayapur Dham, we're not in West Bengal, because of the Lord Sandini Shakti, is maintaining the holy Dham. By his Ladini Shakti, the essence of his pleasure potency, his pleasure pastimes, is going on. The loving dealings, the rasa, between Krishna's devotees is maintained by his Ladini Shakti. But by his Chit Shakti, it's possible for devotees to approach Krishna, for conditioned souls to come in contact with the Ladini Shakti and the Sandini Shakti on the strength of the Jnana Shakti, the Chit Shakti. Without that, conditioned souls can't become liberated. Jnana is required. Because we want to get the highest liberation of entering into Krishna's internal realm, we need special knowledge. Bhakti Jnana. Jnana is a function of the mind, consciousness. When we're correctly aware, consciousness is awareness, but awareness can be confused or bewildered or incomplete. When we have correct awareness, that's called jnana, knowledge. Function of the mind. Bhakti is also a jnana, it's also a kind of consciousness, but it's a special kind of consciousness. When the Chit Shakti is connected with the Ladini Shakti, that's bhakti. When consciousness is enlivened by the ecstasy of pure devotion, that's bhakti. But it's also, strictly speaking, a kind of jnana, special kind of jnana. Bhakti is jnana, but it's a special kind. So, in order to enter the realm of pure devotional service, you need tattva jnana. You need factual, scientific knowledge of what Krishna is, and what you are, and what your relationship with Krishna is. We can get that by studying Srimad Bhagavatam, by chanting Krishna's names. We don't have to study Vedanta Sutra necessarily. But one way or another, we have to get this Tattvajnana. Or just by the blessings of our spirit, we may be ignorant, unlearned, illiterate, but by the blessings of our spiritual master, Dibya Gyan Vide Prakashita, that Tattvajnana is revealed in our hearts by the blessings of the Vaishnavas. It's required. The Jnana is required. So Uddhava, his role is very important. There are other devotees, but as far as the link in the chain of the specific succession of bhakti gyan, Uddhava is the key player now. It's all being put on his shoulders for the beginning of Kali Yuga. After Krishna's disappearance, Krishna deposited in Uddhava the science of Godhead. And Krishna's explaining why Uddhava is qualified. Prabhupada discusses in the purport, you have to be a representative of the Lord, to be the spiritual master, disseminating the knowledge about Krishna. You have to be beyond the modes of nature. You have to be transcendental. It's not enough to be a Brahmin, to be in the mode of goodness. You have to come to Vishuddha Sattva. That's the level of devotional consciousness. Symptom? How do you know someone? Can you recognize someone who's on that level? How can you recognize a bona fide representative of Krishna, a real spiritual master? Prabhupada cites practical criterion from the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Iha yasya harir dasye karmana manasa gira nikalas apavastasu jivan muktasa uchite. If you see somebody who is always working for the service of Krishna, whose all of his endeavors are for the purpose of satisfying Krishna, with his external work, his mental work, his verbal work, how he speaks, how he thinks, how he acts, it's obviously all for the pleasure of Krishna. You can understand that that person is liberated, even though he's still living in a material body, and it may look superficially that he's entangled in material affairs. But if everything he does with his mind, body, and words is just for Krishna's pleasure, then you must recognize him as liberated. And that's a person to be recognized as a bona fide representative of Krishna. Yeah?
This definition doesn't seem to include the most...
I'm sorry, yeah.
This definition,
yes,
doesn't seem to include something that is harder to see. And that is the subtle desires with which one is acting.
The
subtle desires with which one is acting in. possible on this level.
Well, there are three different things: how somebody acts, how somebody speaks, and how somebody thinks. The thinking part, to see inside someone's mind,
yeah,
and then to see inside his heart, that's very difficult.
Yeah.
But you can see what he's saying and what he's doing. If at least those two should match up. You know, he may be talking very elevated, but then how does he behave? You know, so it may be hard to, get all the evidence in, to prove beyond any doubt that a person is liberated. That may be difficult. Ultimately, it takes a Paramahamsa to recognize a Paramahamsa. But there are some practical things you can look for, at least to see who obviously isn't liberated. If someone doesn't practice what he preaches, then he's not as perfect as he says he is, or lets other people say he is. Now, at least the behavior and the speech should match. An honest devotee preaches according to his realization, not above his own head.
Yes.
Offense, yeah, and to be—it's offense, but it's also a big mistake. If you want to be an effective preacher, you should just speak about what you can understand.
Mm-hmm. It would seem from Prabhupada's very frequent use of the iron in the fire that it's very dangerous to rely on our own senses to judge a person's level of advancement, because even in Chaitanya Charitamrita, there's a number of places where it's said if one doesn't keep in the fire, travel and keep them.
Yes.
So it would seem dangerous to...
But you can also use it the other way around. If someone is in the fire, then he may be still imperfect, but the process is dynamic. He's going to become more perfect and may achieve absolute perfection. So we shouldn't reject somebody because we see some imperfection. Nor should we, you know, fanatically assume somebody's perfect when he isn't. Both ways, we should be realistic. But there are practical things. I mean, if you see discrepancy, then it doesn't mean you have to reject the person as a non-Vaishnava. But you see that, you know, maybe he's not as perfect as everybody thinks he is. It's all to be practical.
My emphasis was more in terms that it would seem more appropriate and safer to take shelter of prayer and surrender, like put the matter at the feet of the Lord rather than try and use your own limited capacity to understand who's
Yeah, it's not our business to judge everybody. Not our business to judge. Okay, maybe I was talking about when you have to, you know, decide who you're going to follow. That, I mean, it's not our business to judge everybody, but one who wants to become a disciple has to find a spiritual master. And, okay, you know, you can be given a spiritual master. Someone can just tell you, here's your spiritual master. But really the process is you're supposed to pick your own. So that takes some discrimination. In the beginning, you know, before you choose a spiritual master, you have to discriminate. Then you don't discriminate. Then you accept. So in that situation, where you have to decide who you're going to accept as spiritual authority, you have to be able to, you know, look realistically, according to the standard. You know, how do you recognize who's the real spiritual master? I'm supposed to get a spiritual master. Where am I supposed to find one? How do I judge? Not just, somebody tells me. I should verify that with my own discrimination. And this is how to discriminate. Not that it's our business to go around and judge all the time, but there's some situations where we have to judge. Yeah. In other cases of doubt, when it doesn't matter, you know, that so and so is doing something, let Krishna take care of that. I see some imperfection, but if it's not my business, if it's not my responsibility to judge, then let Krishna judge.
Paradoxical is that doubt, we understand from Shastra, is actually dirt.
That what is dirt?
Doubt.
Doubt.
I understand that from what Krishna says. So when is it discrimination to deal with doubt, and when is it actually just not being prepared to deal with our own dirt?
It's doubt is appropriate and necessary in certain situations. Doubt will save our lives in a dangerous situation. You know, is this a rope or a snake? I have a doubt. So before I pick it up, I should settle the doubt. The doubt is saving me. You know, watch out. You think it's a rope, it might be a snake. So that doubt is a necessary precaution. You know, but a lot of times we doubt about things that, persons know better than us tell us, don't worry, just do this. It's Krishna's desire. And still we doubt. We don't trust our authorities. We don't trust the Shastra. We don't trust Prabhupada. And we doubt about everything. That's inappropriate, the exercise of doubt. But it's a facility provided to us that's useful when appropriate. Free from doubt means not to doubt, you know, the absolute truth, but we have to doubt Maya all the time. Okay, let's move on to Brihadbhagavatamrita. Today's passage. We're sort of moving into a new realm tomorrow's homework assignment is jumping to the 10th canto. All the verses that we have here from the 46th chapter of the 10th canto, there's 49 verses to read, but some of them have purports. So it's a relatively long reading section, but that's tomorrow's assignment. And the next day's assignment is even longer. If you finish today's reading assignment, you can move. If you can continue, you can. If you have some extra time, you can start the 47th chapter, because that's a really long assignment.
You have 2 days for that.
Yes.
You have 2 days for that.
When's the next break?
Wednesday.
I'm sorry. Today is Monday. Tomorrow we meet, and then Wednesday we don't. Okay, then we have a day off. Anyway, for tomorrow you should try to read the 49 verses from this 46th chapter, in which Uddhava is sent by Krishna to carry his message to Vrindavan. Uddhava meets first Nanda and Yashoda, and then he goes and meets the gopis. So he meets the gopis in chapter 47 especially. 46 is his meeting the other Vrijvasis. But in today's selection from the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Uddhava is remembering what he saw in Vrindavan, especially his impression of the exalted devotional service of the gopis. Okay. So I'm reading again from the 5th chapter of the 2nd part of the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, the story of Gopakumar. And when Narada and Uddhava were trying to explain to Gopakumar about the glories of Vrindavan. He's already in Dwarka, they're in Dwarka, but they're explaining to Gopakumar that it's even a greater place, and they're trying to describe the nature of that place. Narada is encouraging Uddhava. Narada has explained some things, but now he's saying, now that we're getting to the more intimate aspects, Uddhava, you're the one who has to talk. So we're on verse 181 of the 5th chapter, the 2nd part, Brihad Bhagavatamrita. Narada speaking. Further distinctions exist among some of these devotees of Sri Madan Gopal. He's talking about the devotees in Vrindavan. But I, Narada, am unfit to describe them. Commentary. Here Narada is hinting at the super excellent devotion to Sri Madan Gopal of those devotees whose service follows in the mood of the blessed gopis. Narada considers Uddhava more qualified than himself to talk about this most confidential topic. Sri Gopakumara said, having spoken thus, Narada embraced Uddhava and with great humility implored him in a pitiful and prayerful voice, please tell us something about this. Agitated by pure love, Uddhava bowed his head low again and again. He then spoke, I offer my respects at every moment to the dust from the feet of the women of Nanda's Vraja. This is actually the last half of this verse is a quote from Uddhava's prayers to the gopis in chapter 47 of the 10th canto. Vande Nanda Vajastrinam Padarenum Abhishnashaha. Those words originally come from the 10th canto. For a moment, that servant of Lord Hari, is Uddhava, appeared agitated and very distressed, placing a blade of grass between his teeth and taking hold of Narada's feet, he spoke again. This is a way to show your humility and how wretched you are. Put grass in your mouth, between your teeth. Rupa Goswami did that also when he met Lord Chaitanya. Commentary. Uddhava expected that by touching Narada's feet, the success of his own prayer would be assured. And then Uddhava recites a prayer of his, originally from, again, the 47th chapter of the 10th canto. Asam oho charana venu jusham ahang syam vrindavane kimapi gulmala taushadhinam yadus jajam swajanam arya patam chahitva bejur mukunda padavim shutibir vimrigyam. The gopis of Vrindavan have given up the association of their husbands, sons, and other family members, who are very difficult to give up. And they have forsaken the path of chastity to take shelter of the lotus feet of Mukunda, Krishna, who one should search for by Vedic knowledge. Oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan, because the gopis trample them and bless them with the dust of their lotus feet. Commentary. This is a verse spoken by Uddhava in the 10th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, 1047-61. Uddhava will now explain this verse briefly, and later on more elaborately. Then Uddhava, enveloped by various transformations of fully blossomed prema, jumped up and continued to sing, full of astonishment.
Nayam Sriyonga Unitantara Te Prasada Swayoshitam Nalina Gandharucham Kutonyaha Rasotsavesya Bujajanda Grihita Kanta Labda Shisham Yaudagad Vrajasundarinam.
When Lord Sri Krishna was dancing with the gopis in the Rasleela, the gopis were embraced by the arms of the Lord. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune or other consorts in the spiritual world. Indeed, never was such a thing even imagined by the most beautiful girls in the heavenly planets, whose bodily luster and aroma resemble the lotus flower. And what to speak of worldly women, who are very beautiful according to material estimation. This is another verse in the 10th canto, 47th chapter, verse 60. Narada will explain this verse thoroughly later on. Uddhava cites these texts from Srimad Bhagavatam to give his words more authority. Then, verse, immersed in total surprise, the great personality Narada then looked at me again, this is Gopakumar talking, and again in my distress, and addressed me with great respect. Gopakumar is in distress, because he doesn't feel exactly satisfied being in Dwarka. Commentary. After hearing from Uddhava, Narada could even better understand how difficult it would be for a less qualified person like himself to attain the prema of Goloka. Therefore, he felt a little discouraged. Narada. Sri Narada said, Uddhava is the very best among the devotees, all the devotees, of the personality of Godhead, because he is so much absorbed in glorifying the dust of the gopis' lotus feet. Indeed, to have the good fortune of being touched by a single particle of dust from their lotus feet, he has prayed for birth as a blade of grass. Rukmini is famous as the dearest queen of Hari, but despite having abandoned the religious principles of an aristocratic maiden just to satisfy Lord Achyuta's desire, and despite having almost once died out of fear from a few of his joking words, she cannot obtain a trace of the gopi's good fortune. Commentary. In the previous verse, Narada commented on two of Uddhava's statements. I offer my respects constantly to the dust from the feet of the women of Nanda's Vraja. And, oh, let me be fortunate enough to be one of the bushes, creepers, or herbs in Vrindavan. In this verse and the next, he comments on the other statement. This transcendental favor was never bestowed upon the goddess of fortune. The name Sri in text 187, Nayom Sriyonga, can be understood to refer either to the consort of Lord Narayan or to Rukmini, Krishna's first queen in Dwarka. Although Rukmini and Krishna were not yet married when Uddhava originally spoke this verse in Vrindavan during his visit to Gokula. In the present context, because they're talking, they're in Dwarka now talking. Because Uddhava is reciting this.
Spiritual Dwarka?
Yes. Dwarka, you know, spiritual world. Because Gopa Kumara has left the material universe. He traveled to Vaikuntha first, and then he came to Dwarka. Because Uddhava is reciting this verse again in the Dwarka of Vaikuntha, it is fitting for the name Shri to indicate Rukmini. Or perhaps, when Uddhava first spoke this verse, he had the mystic foresight, even then, to know that Rukmini was going to be Krishna's first wife. In either case, since Srimati Rukmini is a greater devotee than the goddess Lakshmi, the gopis are, by implication, much greater than Lakshmi. Furthermore, Mahalakshmi, as Rukmini's expansion, is none different from Rukmini. And thus both of them are called Hari Priya. Rukmini, okay, it's said in this verse, Rukmini abandoned the religious principles of an aristocratic maiden just to satisfy Lord Achyuta's desire. How'd she do that? How'd she abandon her principles? Yeah, instead of going through the proper procedure, she asked Krishna to kidnap her. That was not proper. Rukmini abandoned the standards of behavior acceptable for unmarried girls just because Krishna wanted her to. Ignoring the rule that an aristocratic girl should be offered in marriage by her father, she invited Krishna to kidnap her. And when Krishna once teased her, she almost died out of fear that he was rejecting her. This is a quote from the verse. Atatmano nurupam vai. Bhajasva kshatriyar shabam. Yena tvam ashishak satya. Iha mutra chalapsyate. Now you should definitely accept a man, a more suitable husband, a first-class man of the royal order, who can help you achieve everything you want, both in this life and the next. Sri Shukadeva Goswami further describes, Tasya suduka baya shoka vinashta budher, hostad chalatad valayato vyajanam papata. Dehascha viklavadiyat sahasaiva muhyam. Muhyan. Rambeva vayu vihato pravikirdya keshan. Rukmini's mind was overwhelmed with unhappiness, fear, and grief. Her bangles slipped from her hand, and her fan fell to the ground. In her bewilderment, she suddenly fainted, her hair scattering all about as her body fell to the ground like a plantain tree blown over by the wind. So Rukmini is so great. She surrendered it, risked everything. She violated the principles. For an aristocratic girl to behave in a wrong way is like suicide. But she did it. She, acted against the principles by asking Krishna to kidnap her. And we see how attached she was to Krishna. She was practically, shocked to death by Krishna's teasing her. Still, she and the goddess Lakshmi were not able to get the association of the gopis. The goddess of fortune was not allowed to enter the rasa dance, neither was Rukmini. But Uddhava, he didn't enter the rasa dance, but he has got the association of the gopis and could learn how to understand the mystery of their devotional service. Favor not granted to the goddess of fortune or even to Srimati Rukmini.
But in a sense, they did get the association of the gopis, at least at Kurukshetra.
Who did?
Rukmini.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, this poetic description. I mean, it's not that Rukmini is Krishna's internal pleasure potency. And Uddhava is a jiva. But poetically, he's being described as even better. Krishna says, I'm not as much attracted to the goddess of fortune, or even my own brother Balaram, as I am to you, Uddhava. It doesn't mean that Uddhava is better than Balaram, but just Krishna is showing how affectionate he is to Uddhava. Logically, there's contradictions, but it's Krishna expressing his feelings. Okay, so we'll have to stop now. We'll continue tomorrow. All glories to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai.